Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, and welcome again to another trip straight down the weird curves of the rabbit hole with Rachel. And, of course, like I have every weekend that we do this, we've got Carl and TC with me. Could you say hello, Carl?
Hello, TC.
Hello, Carl. Yeah, threw you a curveball,
Rachel.
I guess.
Well, I was about to say, like, it'd be really nice if somebody could say hi to me so that I get to know what we're going to do tonight.
Hi, Rachel. Hello, everybody out there in listener land. Including, of course, my friends in Erie, PA. Randy and Jill are joining us again. I actually have two faithful followers. You know, and I don't even have to pay them to listen to me. That's good.
Well, you know, and also I should say that a friend of mine, Jasmine, from Reno, who was on podcast, the Memorial podcast for David Whittington, she'll be listening tonight too, hopefully.
Hello, Jasmine.
I think we should get... Absolutely. So, Rachel, why don't you tell us what we're doing tonight?
Well, tonight is a really extra special beginning for a really extra special series that we're going to be doing on the podcast this month, and not just down the rabbit hole, because I know nobody listens to that. But if you're listening to any of the ISS podcasts, or the film and stuff or anything like that, we are really focusing on Black History Month right now and really trying to start bringing to attention that there are a lot of Black creators out there that need to be recognized. And I think TC, at least, definitely, I don't know about Carl, like I know more about your classical music side versus your, you know, Motown kind of subversive music side. But I know at least TC agrees with me. There are so many Black artists that are so prolific to the, pushing our future music forward. I can't even articulate like how much this music has impacted every other style of music ever.
Well, and I think a big thing there, of course, we're doing Black History Month, and we're all celebrating, you know, great, great Black people in history, you know, that actually helped shape the world. But, boy, you can't overlook the cultural diversity that happened because of Black music. And we're talking the 40s and the 50s. You know, I mean, the people that opened the doors. And actually, I'm going to celebrate a white guy for just a second here. His name was Alan Freed. He was a Cleveland DJ. And he is directly credited with desegregating music in the 50s. He was one of the first, they give him credit for coining the term rock and roll. But he played Black artists on his radio stations. He promoted concerts where Black and white kids were all coming together. It was the first time that this ever happened. And because of that man, you know, it opened doors for a lot of people. And you can't overlook other people like Nat King Cole, the first TV show host, Black TV show host in 1954, the doors that guy opened. I mean, it all happened in the 50s. I know in the 60s when we're all looking at the, you know, all the civil unrest and everything and how, desegregation happened. But you got to step back one decade to the 1950s to see what rock and roll music did for that diversity.
Well, okay. And that is something.
I might even argue that it really goes back to the 40s. Because you've got people like Cat Calloway, Louis Jordan, Louis Armstrong, a woman that I'll be talking about tonight. But you know, I mean, there were black artists really had a lot of impact. And it wasn't just, you know, like back in the 40s and 30s, they had the race of movies, what they called, and little shorts, musical shorts. And you know, you also talk about jazz. Now, we're not really talking about jazz here, but people like Charlie Parker and Lester Young and all these great jazz artists, too. They had – and then you go back to the 20s and that. A lot of the music back then was also black artists, and you've got the black blues artists and so on and so forth. So, I mean, the musical thread of black culture goes all the way back to the cotton fields and spirituals and such.
Absolutely, and, you know, and it goes back to black gospel. It goes back to the church.
And I said spiritual and gospel, absolutely.
Yep.
Absolutely. So, Rachel, go ahead.
Thank you, guys. So I was going to say that as far as that is concerned, this is one of the earlier black female artists, which is what I am focusing on for our entire month of black history. We're doing black female, we're doing love songs, black love songs, African-American, however you decide.
For Valentine's Day.
Yes, for Valentine's Day, we are doing love songs, and we are choosing to do African-American and black-centric love songs. And so the first one that I have, since, I mean, we're going to, you know, go back and talk about back in the fucking day when music was good music, this is one that I can't get a lot of research on. I've tried. She's hard. But holy crap, this is the love song from a woman to a man that you really need to hear in your life. And that's Candy by Big Maybelline. And if you call your baby boo, you call him Candy, you call him your honey, you call him your sugar, your sweetie, anything else. Or them, I should say them, because if you call your significant other any sort of pet name, this is the love song for you. And so, Carl,
and here
we
have
Candy. Yeah.
Candy by Big Maybell, and I'll say something after the song.
Candy, I'm sweet on candy, and candy he's sweet on me. He understands me. Is always handy just when I need sympathy. He has taken my complete and make him mine. Mine, oh mine, yeah. Mine, oh mine. The day that I take my candy and make him
song. That is a gorgeous song.
Is that not a fucking love song? Oh my candy. Oh, seriously.
So let me just give you a little background on Big Maybelle. She was born Mabel Smith. Her first recordings were in 1948 for King Records. But then she went on OK Records, and she actually was the first person to record Whole Lot of Shaking Going On by up-and-coming producer Quincy Jones a full 2 years before Rockabilly and Jerry Lee Lewis's version. So also, this particular song was on Savoy Records, and she was also in the film Jazz on a Summer's Day with Mahalia Jackson and Dinah Washington. And then she had a lot of hits in the 50s, but it dried up after that. And her last hit single was in 67, a cover of 96 Tears by Question Mark and the Mysterians. And she died of drug overdose and a diabetic coma in Cleveland, Ohio in 1972. So thought you might want to get a little bit of information on her.
That's more than a little. And, boy, you covered her well. That was another one.
Yeah, I actually have several of her records in my record collection, which is no longer my record collection, but John Shearer has it. But, yeah, I was a big fan of Big Maybelle, absolutely.
You know, we're going to hear a lot of great, great female black artists, you know, and we all know the names. But you wonder how many people like her just kind of flew under the radar. I mean, she has such a strong, strong voice. And, you know, I'm surprised she didn't have more recognition. You know, people didn't recognize her more. Maybe bad management. Who knows? But, boy, that was a good pick right there, Rachel. Way to start the show.
Okay, it's your turn.
Wow. Yeah, I was going to say thank you for that, and that it's also your turn, TC. So I hope you keep up with me, because that's not even my best one yet.
I'm going to do my best. I'm going to do my best. You're focusing on the great dames of Black History Month rock and roll. I'm focusing on Rock and Roll Hall of Fame members. And every one of my selections tonight is in the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. And I'm going to start us off with the Four Tops. We all know them. And the song we're going to hear was actually in 1965 was the number one hit. Of course, they're a band from Detroit. They're Motown. They started as a 4-AM. In 1953, and all four of them stayed together till 1997. 44 years they stayed together, the original four guys. And what's interesting about the Four Tops is most of the bands coming out on Motown, they had a tenor as a lead singer. But the Four Tops had Levi Stubbs, who was a baritone, and which was a really rare exception. And they were inducted into the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame in 1990, and we're going to hear Can't Help Myself, parentheses, Sugar Babe Honey Bunch. So, Carl,
here we go. Can't Help Myself by the Four Tops.
Thank you.
classic. Just a classic.
Oh, absolutely. And that's one I was actually trying to avoid playing because it was so classic that I was like, oh my God, something else is going to pick that up and need to play it. And, yeah.
Well, I think all my songs are going to be familiar tonight, but I kind of like when I was thinking about this, you know, I mean, I could have went deep and found stuff that people weren't familiar with, but whoever's listening, I kind of like hoping these songs will kind of bring back a memory maybe, or like somebody like Carl who's really into movies. So you go, oh, yeah, I remember this scene when this song was playing, but they're all.
I'm really hoping for that too, because mine is all familiar artists, but maybe not the songs that you became familiar with them for.
Yeah.
Absolutely. Well, I'm going to go the opposite way, and I'm going to be focusing on songs, particularly female, but also male. Of artists you may not know, and generally instead of a love song, it's basically a lot of them are either spelling songs, which I'll get into later, or they're particularly I want to get laid songs. Okay, so right now we're going to focus on an artist by the name of Mabel John. Mabel John, basically, they moved to Detroit, and she worked for Berry Gordy's mother at an insurance company. And then Berry started, writing songs and getting Motown together. This is in the late 50s. And she got to know Berry, and she actually played the last concert. She debuted on the last concert that Billie Holiday ever sang in Detroit.
Huh.
So
wow.
I find that very interesting. She was first signed to Motown, but on the Tamla label, and she did a couple songs, but she was more old school, and so it didn't work out for her as a solo artist. She became a Ray Lett for many, many, many years, one of Ray Charles's backup singers. But then she got together with Stax and the people down in Memphis, and she did pretty well with them, but only one of her seven songs that she put out ever broke the top 40. And that was, Your Good Thing is About to End. But this is a song called Able Mabel. And I'll also just give you one little bit of information after the song. So we're going to be listening to Mabel John and Able Mabel. Let's see what you guys think of this.
My name is Mabel, and don't you think I ain't able? I can take a complication, make it a simple situation. I'm a hot in the morning, real cool in the evening. Make you wanna come back, or when you're thinking you're leaving. Able Mabel,
was featured in John Sayles' movie Honey Dripper as an aging blues singer, and she's absolutely fantastic in that film. So, you know, there's somebody you don't know, but damn it, you should. Mabel John. What do you think, GC?
Have you heard any of her other work? I mean, I assume you have. Is she really leaned towards jazz?
Let me put it this way. There's a lot of Billie Holiday in her.
Yeah. So. I mean, until the horns came in, you know, I really, I was picturing her as a jazz singer and a very good jazz singer. And again, back to the lounge singer that we keep bringing up that, you know, somebody you could see playing in that smoky bar room, you know, but yeah, I really liked her. There's another female voice that why wasn't she bigger than she was? You know, I mean, it's just,
absolutely.
There's so many of them out there. We found a couple already today.
Oh yeah, we got more coming, by the way. Rachel, what did you think of Mabel John?
I do notice how you keep bringing up Billie Holiday. I think there might be a reason for that.
Yeah, there is.
Other than
because my favorite romantic and also fuck you dude songs ever come from the quintessential black female artist, and as far as I'm concerned, that's Billie Holiday. I mean, this woman came from prostitution and brought herself to where she did, and yeah, the end wasn't as great as it could have been, but God, was it good when she was doing it.
Yeah, absolutely.
I think with a lot of the black female singers that, you know, we're going to hear tonight and all the others, I mean, it almost starts with Billie Holiday for many, many, many of them.
Agreed. So it's your choice now, Miss Rachel. So where do we go from here? Rachel?
Did we lose her?
She's still on as far as I can see. Rachel?
Oh, my God. I've been talking to you guys for so long about Billie Holiday and everybody else, and I apparently hit the mute button. I am so sorry. So
we're lip readers, so we heard it. We got it.
Exactly. So long story short, Billie Holiday, best love songs and breakup songs ever. Yay for that lady. She is a prolific figure in black history because even though she was a prostitute and a drug addict, she did the most beautiful shit we've ever seen in our lives. And we are going to do a Billie Holiday song now. Maybe.
And what's the name of it? Rachel?
Hello?
Rachel,
hello?
What's the name of the song?
Okay. Oh, okay. You guys are here? Name of the Billie Holiday song is going to be Crazy He Calls Me.
And here we go. Crazy He Calls Me by Billie Holiday.
And I'll move the mountains.
if he wants them out of the way. Crazy calls me, sure I'm crazy, crazy in love I'd say. I say I'll go through fire, and I'll go through fire, as he wants it, so it will be. Crazy calls me, sure I'm crazy, crazy in love, you see. Like the wind that shakes the bough, he moves me with a smile. The difficult I'll do right now, the impossible will take a little while. I say I'll care forever, and I mean forever, if I have to hold up the sky. Crazy he calls me, sure I'm crazy, crazy in love am I. Like the wind that shakes the bough, he moves me with a smile. The difficult I'll do right now, the impossible will take a little while. I say I'll care forever, and I mean forever, if I have to hold up the sky. Crazy he calls me, sure I'm
gorgeous. That's just friggin' gorgeous. Seriously.
Absolutely. I mean, that was Billie Holiday. I mean, what an inspiration to so many, so many singers that followed her.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, like,
agreed.
Everybody followed her. And seriously, like, when she sang a love song, I mean, considering her backstory on shit, I mean, she was literally a drug-addicted prostitute, and it was so beautiful, the things that she could make people feel. And mm-hmm. that is something that has always, always, always brought me closer to Billie Holiday, is even when you're fucked up and feeling bad, she feels like you're feeling.
Yeah. Absolutely. Yep. Can't say much more than that. So, TC, I think it's your choice now.
I think it is my choice. And on December 9th, 1967, a plane crash in Lake Monona, Wisconsin, took our next person I'm going to feature. And you know who that is, Carl?
Absolutely, I know who it is.
Yep. Another
guy.
Otis
Redding.
Too young. Exactly.
Yeah.
Otis Redding, who was he's inducted into the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame in 1989. The song we're going to hear was actually written in 1932, and the first person to ever record it was Bing Crosby. Now, by, you know, fast forward 34 years, Otis Redding turned it into a soul song. And, of course, his background was heavy in gospel music. And the really, truly sad thing about it is the song everybody knows Otis Redding for, Sitting on the Dock of the Bay, he never got to enjoy the success of that song because he recorded it only a few days before he died. Yeah, that was the first song to reach number one posthumously for an artist. And the second was Janis Joplin. But anyways, here's an interesting little tidbit. When he was coming back, when he was supposed to come back from that tour, I think it was only a 10-show tour that his plane crashed on, but when he was coming back from the tour, Robin and Barry Gibb of the Bee Gees had written a song for him that he was supposed to record. But, of course, you know, he died, so he never recorded it. And they recorded it and put it on one of their albums. It's called To Love Somebody. You know that song by the Bee Gees. That was supposed to be originally an Otis Redding song. But the song we're going to hear, like I said, written in 1932, first recorded by Bing Crosby. This goes out to my friend Jill in Erie. This is Try a Little Tenderness.
And here we go. Try a Little Tenderness by Otis Redding.
Oh, she may be weary, and young girls, they do get weary wearing that same old shaggy dress, yeah, yeah. But when she gets weary, try a little tenderness. She's waiting, yep, anticipating for things that she'll never, 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 never possess, yeah, yeah. But while she's there waiting, and without them, try a little tenderness. It's not just sentimental, no, no, no. She has her grief and care, yeah, yeah, yeah. But the soft words, they are spoke so gentle, yeah. It makes it easier to bear. You won't regret it, no, no. Some girls, they don't forget it. Love is their home, happiness, yeah. But it's all so easy.
Just damn. Damn, is that good. He was such a great vocalist. Oh yeah. And whenever brass comes in, the horns come in, man, you know it's a stacked song.
Oh, it gets so powerful at that point.
It does, sure does go real.
Yep. So you got about Otis Redding you want to talk to us about, TC?
Yeah, you know, I'll tell you, I have not looked. I just found that out this week or last 2 weeks when I was researching for the show. That it was actually a 1932 song recorded by Bing Crosby. I have not looked for that. I'm going to after this show because I just can't picture Bing Crosby singing that song. And I have
I promise you, buddy, you're not the only one that can't picture that.
Yeah, and I didn't want to do it before the show, you know, because that probably would just fuck me all up. So, I mean, someday I'm going to listen to that, find Bing Crosby's version, and think, what the hell is this? Yeah.
Well, that song has been re-recorded by so many different people. Peggy Lee did a version of that, it's done as a ballad. It's done as a ballad, the thing about the Otis Redding version is that tempo change, and then of course his voice with that tempo change, and then Steve Cropper and all the guys coming in, man, you just think of it immediately as a soul piece. You don't think anymore of Bing Crosby or Peggy Lee or, you know, several people have done it. Rosemary Clooney did a version of it, George Clooney's mom.
Carl, one more question. You've seen the movie The Commitments, correct?
Oh yeah.
About the Dublin band. They really did a nice cover of that song in that movie.
Yes, they did. So, that's a great, great movie that not many people remember.
That's one of my favorites right there.
Yeah.
Okay.
Absolutely.
Go ahead. I'm sorry.
So one of the reasons that I asked to be last was because I knew you were doing that song, and I have the perfect follow-up to that song. So Otis Redding was part of Stax Records, but he also did numerous duets with our next artist, and her name is Carla Thomas, and they actually did the first version of Respect that was released before the Aretha Franklin version. And this is a song by Carla Thomas. This is the first of my spelling songs. This is B-A-B-Y by Carla Thomas on the Stax 1965.
Make me
And that's Carla Thomas and B-A-B-A-Y. One of the other things about Carla is she's the daughter of Rufus Thomas, who gave us Walking the Dog.
I was just going to bring that up. Walking the Dog,
yep.
Do the Funky Chicken. Mm-hmm. He was, and he, you know, and they did duets together, too.
Oh,
daughter duet.
Yeah, and I had the pleasure of seeing Rufus Thomas and Carla Thomas at the Chicago Blues Fest in the 80s.
Oh, boy.
And they were great,
he stayed
man.
Active for a long, he was active from the 40s
absolutely.
Right up until he died in, like, early 90s, I believe. But, yeah, he was considered the
mid-90s. Mid-90s it was.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Queen of Memphis Soul. And then, you know, because his influence, and then they said he was so influential all the way from the 40s on up. But he
absolutely.
Was mostly known for his comedy dance songs, like you said, Walking a Dog, Do the Funky Chicken. I can't remember the other one. But, I'm quite familiar with Rufus Thomas. And
okay.
I did not
so,
know
so,
that was his daughter until I looked it up while you were playing that song.
So what did you think, Rachel?
I thought it was fine. Very wonderful.
Yes. Also featured in the movie Baby Driver, by the way. Okay. So I'm done now. So I guess it's your turn, Miss Rachel.
Oh, me. Damn.
Yes, you.
Well, I mean... I don't know. You guys have been having a real good conversation tonight, so maybe I defer to you two.
Okay, so where do we go from here?
I guess let's just go chronologically, and we'll do No Ordinary Love by Sade. Another one of the most prolific black female artists in history. There you go, guys.
All right.
Sade.
So it's No Ordinary Love by Sade.
I gave you all the love I got, I gave you
Very nice. Very nice.
Beautiful song. Who was that by?
Sade.
Oh, okay, yeah, sure. She had an incredible voice. I'm guessing 1990s, late 90s
yeah.
for that.
Yeah, I think it was like 1980, like late 80,
yeah.
88 or 89. And it's Sade, by the way.
Okay.
And she... I remember when she broke out, it was like Smooth Operator. Wasn't that the first big song for her?
That was one of her first big ones.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, she is like iconic for just beautiful, sultry love songs.
The word smooth comes in, even like when there's song Smooth Operator, but she just has this a smooth, lovely voice about her.
Absolutely. Absolutely. So I think it's your turn now, TC.
It is. And I have another guy continuing my Rock and Roll Hall of Fame members set list. This guy was actually inducted in the first class of Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, which was 1986. And I'm talking about Sam Cooke. The song we're going to hear is probably one of his most famous, You Send Me. He wrote it in 1955 and didn't really do anything with it. In 1956, he recorded it in New Orleans with just accompanying himself on a guitar. And it wasn't until 1957 when he took it to Los Angeles to a studio and they put full instrumentation behind it that it became a big song. But, however, this is the first, the next, let's see, I got four songs left. Three out of four
right.
were actually B-sides the DJs flipped over and made more popular than the A side. This song was on a single called Summertime, which he did a cover of. And on the B side was You Send Me, and some DJs started flipping it over and became one of the best love songs of all time. So Sam Cooke, You Send Me.
And here we go.
Darling, you send me. At first I thought it was infatuation, myself wanting to marry you and take you home.
I know, I know, I know.
You just can't get more smooth than that. Sorry, Sade.
We both said it at the same time. It's,
seriously.
You know, and there's the whole thing about his death was just so weird. You know, I mean, there's still no answers. You know, I mean, people thinking he might have been murdered, he was set up, whatever. You know, but he was just acting crazy, and that motel clerk shot him, and that's history. And Carl, one of our listeners, I got more listeners than I thought I did, actually texted me on Facebook. Did you say that Rosemary Clooney was George Clooney's father or mother?
Mother, yes.
No, it was his aunt.
Oh, okay, aunt. Okay, never mind. Aunt Rosemary.
Opposed
to Uncle Tom. Okay, never mind.
Thank you to Carol Everett Sanders for straightening that out for us.
Hey, I'm not perfect. God knows that's the truth. You, how many years have you known me? You know I'm not perfect.
I just happened to look at Facebook and somebody said, hey, tell him it was his aunt, not his mother.
Okay.
There you go.
But they're related.
Hey, we got three people listening. Woohoo!
Yay!
Okay.
So Rachel? I'm going to do a little something here.
I haven't heard what Rachel has to think about that.
Oh, yeah, Rachel. Rachel,
yeah, I'm here.
In Memphis. Oh, there you are. So what did you think of Sam Cooke?
Is it ready?
Hi,
wonderful.
Tomlin. Give her a hug for me. So I'm going to keep
going. Do that.
Absolutely. Hi, Bromlin. So I'm going to keep going here. And we all know that Rachel loves Billie Holiday. Well, for me, of female singers of that era, it's Ella Fitzgerald. I remember being very young, and my parents had albums of Ella. I would listen to her, and I loved the scat singing. And this is a song, a duet she does with Louis Armstrong. And it's a well-known song.
Beautiful.
And it's Dream a Little Dream of Me, which actually was made famous in our era by the Mamas and Papas. So this is Dream a Little Dream of Me by Ella Fitzgerald and Louis Armstrong.
Stars shining bright above you. Night breezes seem to whisper, I love you. Birds singing in the sycamore tree. Dream a little dream of me. Sit night and night and kiss me. Just hold me tight and tell me you miss me. While I'm alone and blue as can be, dream a little dream of me.
Stars fading, but I linger on, dear.
Oh, how you linger on.
Still craving your kiss.
How you crave my kiss.
Now I'm longing to linger till dawn, dear. Just sing this.
Give me a little kiss, sweet dream, till sunbeams find you. Sweet dreams that leave all worries behind you. But in your dreams, whatever they be, dream a little dream of me.
Buzz, 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 buzz,
buzz, buzz,
fading, but I linger on, dear, still craving your kiss. Yeah, I'm longing to linger till dawn, dear. Just saying this.
The sweet dreams,
dreaming.
Till something find you, keep dreaming.
Gotta keep dreaming.
In your dreams, whatever they be, you've got to make me a promise,
oh, yeah.
Promise to me
you'll dream.
Dream a little dream of me.
You can't get much better than that, folks. You really can't.
Not at all.
I love her voice. I just adore Ellis' voice. And Louis had a great singular voice, too. And the two of them work really well together on that. What did you think, DC?
I had a perfect visualization in my head of those two singing with each other. And
yeah.
What a classic. What a classic.
Yeah.
Now, there's two right there who are very prominent in Black History Music Month. You know, I mean, what they contributed to Black music and what they, the doors that they opened up. You know, I mean,
Absolutely. Try
Louis Armstrong. You know, you could pick the biggest white redneck possible of the 60s. But he loved Louis Armstrong. You know,
mm-hmm.
Who didn't? You know, anytime
exactly.
You saw him come on TV, you know you're right. You're in for something special right then.
Absolutely. Absolutely. So, Rachel, anything else to say about Louis and Ella?
Not too particularly anything that I ever already said about artists earlier.
Okay, so where do we go from here, Rach?
Oh, I guess is it my turn now?
Yes, it is.
Well, fun. I guess that we'll just go, like, chronologically here, like I've kind of been doing, and we'll do someone that didn't have a prolific career but had a prolific song, a prolific love song, and that would be Kiss the Rain by Billy Myers.
Okay, here we go. Kiss the Rain by Billy Myers.
Yeah.
Let's Kiss the Ring. Now, that's a song I did not know. I don't know this song.
Neither do I.
How did you guys not even know that song? Like, that was the biggest thing.
Maybe I wasn't into the biggest thing at that point. Perhaps.
Yeah. What year are you talking, Rachel? When?
Okay, let's see. It was at my grandmother's house, so it was before my third grade year. I'm 36, almost 37. I don't know, like 20, 25 years ago.
No, I wasn't listening to that type of music at that point in time. Sorry.
I don't know where the hell I was.
Yeah, well, you guys have fun. What's coming up next?
All right.
Yeah, TC.
Next one for me, keeping the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame members thing going with them. This next one is by the Isley Brothers. Okay. And everybody knew them from their big song, Shout. Twist and Shout. They were actually a Cincinnati gospel group back in 1953. And they moved to New York City, New Jersey. They finally settled in Detroit with Motown, became one of the most influential bands there. And interestingly, the song we're going to hear was released as a single. It's called I Guess I'll Always Love You, but it didn't chart well. And I think the Isley Brothers really got into a little, you know, where they're kind of trapped in that Shout thing where they come out with a love song. Even though it's an up-tempo love song, it still didn't do well for them. And another cool thing is just before what music they were making before this song came out in 1967, in 1966, Jimi Hendrix played guitar for the Isleys for about a year, and he left just before this song was made. So this is the Isley Brothers, I Guess I'll Always Love You. And they were inducted in 1992 of the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame.
Okay, and here we go, I Guess I'll Always Love You by the Isley Brothers.
Thank you.
Now, as you said, TC, I know the Isley Brothers, and I know a couple other songs in shop, but I don't know that one. Didn't know that one.
Yeah, like I said, it really didn't chart well, and I think it was because, you know, it just seemed a little different than, you know, everybody was shouting, you know. I don't know. I loved that song, and I'm surprised it never did much better. I've heard it in a couple movies, actually.
Okay.
Well, it's a good little song. Rachel, what did you think?
That it was a good little song.
Well, I guess at this point it's my turn, and we're going to go with one of the queens of the blues, and this is Etta James, and don't worry, we're not doing that last, Rachel. No, we're not doing that song. We're doing a song that was featured in several movies. This is one of those songs that basically I want to get laid by you. And I hate to break it to both of you, but this song was written by Randy Newman, but you never heard it like this before.
You know,
this
I'm
is
a
you
Randy
can
Newman
leave.
Band.
Okay, go ahead. Go ahead, TC.
You know, I'm a Randy Newman fan, and I know this song from Joe Cocker, so go right ahead.
Okay, yeah, best known by Joe Cocker, but this is Etta James' version, and you're going to like this.
Wow.
What do you think?
Wow. Tell you, Joe Cocker never made me break out into a sweat when I listened to his version.
No.
He poured that, what you said, right into that song, boy. And we got another friend of ours that we graduated with, Mike Crawford, listening in. And he really loved that song, too. One question we have, though, is did Randy Newman write that when he was very young, or did Etta James do it late in her career?
No. He was the first to record it off Sail Way Out.
Okay.
And I have a story about this. Okay, we're all from Bradford. Bradford's a small little town up in northwestern PA. And so they used to have a thing called Kiwanis Keepers, where you would have, you know, the people would do it, and it was run by a guy by the name of John Kiddick. Now, I have a question for you.
It's a community variety show. I guess the easiest
way. Variety show. TC, do you remember Angie Jameson?
Oh, sure.
Okay. How shall I put this? Angie was a middle-aged woman, but she was amply protruded. Let's put it that way. So we came up, Angie and I came up with an idea for Kiwanis Keepers, where I would do the Randy Newman version, and she would do a slight strip tease. And we started in the auditions, and Kiddick looked at me like, no, you are not doing that.
Yeah, that would have put Bradford, that would have shocked Bradford. The hospital would have been full that night.
I wanted to get her up on a table and the whole shot, right? No.
Yeah.
And she was up for it, by the way. She was up for it.
Oh, of course. I can see her being, definitely. And thanks for the visual on that one. Wow. That was a great version, though. I had never heard that, Carl, surprisingly. That version of the song.
So, Rachel, what did you think of that song?
What did I think about the song or the very long memories that we were sharing?
No, Etta James. What did you think of Etta James' version of that?
I've heard that before. I told you that it was the song I was going to play, but you played it. So.
Oh, that's right. You did tell me that. Okay. So I guess we're at your point in time here. So what do you got for us?
I don't even know at this point. This is you guys' show. I think you guys need to pick the next song.
Okay, fair enough. Well, listen, I'll see what we got here from you, okay? So you got Billy Myers.
No, I think you or TC need to pick the next song for tonight on the show. That would be really awesome.
TC, it's yours.
Okay, I got another song that was a B-side. They got flipped over by DJs and became more popular. And in fact, I don't even know what the A-side was. But the next song we're going to hear is by Smokey Robinson and the Miracles. Now, how can you do a Valentine's Day without Smokey? But as you know, Smokey Robinson, he was inducted in the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame by himself in 1987. And he petitioned for so long to get the Miracles in there, too. And they were finally put in 2012, which was it was one of the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame travesties. You know, I mean, they belonged together. Of course, he was the big name, but he always gave props to the Miracles. But anyways, this song, probably one of the most covered songs that they're out there. The Beatles actually did, they put this out in 1962. The Beatles recorded it in 1963. Smokey was in a hotel room. He was doing business for Motown in New York City. He was listening to the radio, and he heard Sam Cooke's Bring It On Home to Me, and inspired him to write this song, which he did in the hotel room that night. And the song we're going to listen to is You Really Got a Hold on Me by Smokey Robinson and the Miracles.
And here we go. Definite classic.
Yeah, there's probably, 20 Smokey Robinson and Miracle songs I could have picked, but that one's one of my favorites. That's why I wanted to play that one. I mean, you know, it's Valentine's Day, Smokey, you know it.
I don't know if you remember it, but there was a cartoon that was set to that song with a snake. I can't remember exactly what it was. But I do remember that. It's a great song.
Yeah.
Great song.
Yep, you can't go wrong with those guys. And like I said, it was kind of such a travesty that, like, the Rock Hall, you know, that is all about Smokey. And, you know, he campaigned for 25 years. No, it's not about me. It's about the whole group. You know, we all need to be in there together. You know, that'd be like,
you know,
picking out.
There's a number of situations like that with the Hall of Fame. And
right.
There are so many,
you know,
people that should be there that aren't. So, you know, I mean, it's what it is.
I recognize the Rock Hall for some, but not for a lot of them. I mean, you know, I love that they, you know, that they honored the roots of rock, like Smokey and Otis Redding and Sam Cooke and stuff like that. But after a while, it's like anybody that put out a record 25 years later, you're in, except if you're these guys, you know. We could do a whole show on just the bands that should be in the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. But
absolutely. And I think maybe we'll do that at one point or another.
That'd be cool.
So Rachel is not feeling well tonight. So I guess it's just going to be you and me unless she calls back. So we'll see what happens.
Do you have
some songs by her, which I can certainly include. So we'll do the whole playlist.
All right. Why don't we do ours, and then we got time left at the end. We'll play the rest of hers.
Okay. So I'm gonna go with. Okay. So I've got to preface this. Back in the '90s, there was a wonderful, wonderful set of music that was put out by the Stax label, and this is where I first heard Mabel John, Able Mabel, which we started with. But there's another song by a group that I have very little information on. This is Gene and the Darlings. And this is one of those songs that if it had been played, I think it would have been a big friggin' hit. But unfortunately, that's not the case. And that's a shame. So I don't think you've ever heard this, TC. But this is a song called What Will Later... Say that again?
What year are you looking at here?
I think this was like 67.
Okay.
Don't have an exact date on this. I don't have the Stax set with me anymore. But this is this is about 67. What will later on be like by
the song that got lost in the shuffle with Stax. Stax really...
Oh, yeah. And there were several.
Really, Stax was like almost in competition with Motown. You know, they were trying to cut people off left and right. They were,
there's no question.
They were a record label that threw everything into the wall to see what would stick. Didn't matter. They would record everywhere. Everybody were Berry Gordy, you know, I mean, he was really, really, picky about who was the Motown. And Stax, and I think that's probably what happened with the artists you're about to play, you know, it's just another one who got lost in the shuffle. It just, you know.
Oh, absolutely. This is Gene and the Darlings, and What Will Later On Be Like, and we'll talk about it afterwards. Hold on.
Okay.
I know you're gonna run around, ooh, yeah, and stay out. Treat me like a
So what do you think of that, TC?
Yeah, why they did not come, you know, one of the ones we know. It's a crime, actually, because I'll tell you what, that chick has some pipes. She can sing.
Well, absolutely.
Yeah, and I think
you know,
that's
the thing.
Was.
I mean, I was a record collector. And so I used to go to different radio stations and pick stuff up, and there's stuff that you've never heard of that's, like, amazing. And that's one of them. I finally did get the 45 for that. I looked for it and finally found the 45 for that. I don't think it was ever released nationally. I mean, even locally. Because all I have on that is a promo.
You know, those radio stations, they used to get flooded, just absolutely flooded with records that never made it off the racks. And if you could have bought
absolutely.
A radio station's collection, you would have had something. You know, it's...
I did.
And
I did. I bought at least two or three radio stations that they were selling most of their stuff, and I heard about it, and I got maybe not the whole collection, but a good portion of it. But, you know,
yeah.
I was actually above the store on Pine Street. I had Vinyl Valhalla, and I had dealers from all over come to me, from Cleveland, from Columbus, from Pittsburgh, from Buffalo, from Rochester. You know, I mean, I was pretty well known there for a couple of years doing this. So, yeah.
If, you know, and you think about it, there's just one DJ in a big city, like Chicago or something like that, that took a chance and put that record on the turntable, you know, things could have turned out so much different. And
absolutely.
I really believe that what I said about Stax, you know, I mean, they were throwing everything they could out, you know, just trying to compete with Motown. And I'm sure every record, you know, a lot of the bigger stations ended up with that album, but it never made it off the rack. Never made it onto the turntable,
yeah.
And that's a crime because that song was so good, and that band song.
Oh, that's
again, you know, she,
you know,
she
and again, that's the Stax. That's the Stax horn section. That's Cropper. That's all those guys. They were just phenomenal. They really were. And of course, a lot of the Stax stuff was David Porter and Isaac Hayes. That's a song co-written by Isaac Hayes.
Oh, really? Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Yeah, they had an incredible sessions group. You know, they're moving in and out all the time, of course, but some of the
and most of them ended up on the Blues Brothers. Most of them ended up on the Blues Brothers band.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And you know, you're talking Lou Marini and Bones Malone, Tom Bones Malone. And
yeah.
There's so many guys. You know, and Paul Schaefer, you got to give him credit for pulling all those people together. And we could do a whole show on the Blues Brothers, the history of that, and Dan Aykroyd, how Dan Aykroyd just had a brilliant, brilliant, you know, history of blue, you know, the blues in his mind. You know,
and
I mean,
so did Belushi, too.
Yeah. Well, Belushi got more introduced to it when he was in Seattle, Washington, actually, and Dan Aykroyd built it up. Now, real quick story. When they were filming Saturday Night Live, Dan Aykroyd rented a bar. He had a bar in, I think it was in New Jersey. But the cast members would all go over there after the show. And he had a jukebox full of Sam and Dave and all these oldies and blues. And that's where John Belushi really, really got into it. You know, Dan Aykroyd actually introduced John Belushi to the blues like that. And they had instruments around. People would come out. They'd do a jam. But it's a fascinating story. But Dan Aykroyd grew up in Ottawa, Ontario. And even as a young kid, he used to sneak into blues clubs. And the one that first influenced him was a Downchild Blues Band, who you've heard of from Toronto.
Yeah.
And that was his big first influence. But getting back to what you just played just now, I wish that song that band would have been in everybody's radar. Like you said, I had never heard of them before, and it's going to make me want to look them up and, you know, to see what else is out there that I can listen to.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. So it's back to you, Mr. TC. Where do we go from here?
It is, and this is actually my last song of the night. So we'll get mine out of the way, yours out of the way. You want to throw a couple of Rachel's on, and we'll have a little time left. That'd be great. But this is a Roll Hall of Fame member, and it's the Drifters. Now, the song we're going to listen to, Save the Last Dance for Me, was a 1960 number one hit, and it featured Ben E. King on lead vocals. Now, you know, before Ben E. King became their lead vocalist, Clyde McFadder was their lead vocalist. What's cool about this song is, okay, this was another one that was a B-side, and the guy who was credited with flipping it over and playing Save the Last Dance for Me was Dick Clark, not my dad, whose name was Dick Clark, but the other Dick Clark, the more famous one. But
the one called the New Year's Eve with Rockin' Dick Clark, yes.
Yes.
The Rockin' New Year's Eve.
He's credited when he was a DJ. He's the one to flip this Drifter song over and call him Save the Last Dance for Me, and we all know it. But what was cool back in those days in the 1960s and stuff, somebody put out a song, and about maybe, you know, a year later, somebody put out an answer song to that. So Drifters did Save the Last Dance for Me. A year later, a lady called Darnita Joe. You ever heard of her?
Yes.
Darnita Joe?
Yes, I have.
Okay, Darnita Joe, a year later, put out a song called I'll Save the Last Dance for You. You know, it was a little answer to theirs. And here's another kind of interesting tidbit. On the production team for the Drifters' hit was then unknown apprentice named Phil Spector. So,
wow.
Yeah, he was an apprentice on this song. Okay, I don't know if he got actually credit on the, you know, album jacket or whatever, but he was definitely on there. Okay, and they were, the Drifters were in, inducted in the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame in 1988, third year that they had inductions. So let's hear Save the Last Dance for Me, and it's my last song.
All right. Absolutely. Here we go.
You can dance every dance with the guy who gives you the eye to let him hold you tight. You can smile every smile for the man who held your hand neath the pale moonlight. But don't forget who's taking you home and in whose arms you're gonna be. So darling, say the last dance for me. Oh, I know that the music's fine, like sparkling wine. Go and have your fun. Laugh and sing. But while we're apart, don't give your heart to anyone. But don't forget who's taking you home and in whose arms you're gonna be. So darling, say the last dance for me. Baby, don't you know I love you so? Can't you feel it when we touch? I will never, never let you go. I love you oh so much. You can dance,
you can dance.
Go and carry
you
on
dance.
Till the night is gone
dance.
And it's time to
you
go.
You can dance.
If he asks,
you can dance.
If you're all
you
alone, can he take you,
you
home?
Dance.
You must tell him
you
no. Cause don't forget who's taking you home and in whose arms you're gonna be. So darling, say the last dance for me. Cause don't forget who's taking you home and in whose arms you're gonna be. So darling, say the last dance for me. Say the last dance for me.
again, a really smooth song.
Yeah, and Benny King, I mean, his voice, like Clyde McFadder, of course, was, you know, phenomenal. Benny King just nails that song. And there's another interesting thing where, you know, we're talking about inclusions, exclusions in Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. They actually included all the Drifters. Even though Clyde McFadder was only with the band for a little while, but he was there at the beginning and at the Influence. So not only was Benny King included in the Drifters, but they included Clyde McFadder too in the induction, you know, where they could easily say, well, no, he wasn't there for all their big songs. So that's a good thing.
Well, McFadder, you know, they had a couple really big songs with the Drifters and then went out on his own and had a couple medium hits, but didn't really do too much on his own. But that's the way it was back then. You know?
Sure. There were a lot of these groups that were somebody tried to bust out on their own, and it's just, I mean, it's a rare occasion like Smokey Robinson or somebody like that, or Diana Ross could break out on her own, but a lot of them just failed. You know, they weren't the selling power, the star power that they thought they were with the group. And, you know, it's a testament to how they, you know, because all these bands back then, Drifters, Isley Brothers, it wasn't about one guy out there. There's so many harmonies in the background that actually made their songs. And it was, you know, it was more group-oriented, I believe, with a lot of those Motown, Stax Records groups where, you know, it wasn't just one person that was the star.
Yeah, exactly. Now, I my last song is something that I actually sent to you. It's a song. Now, it's known as Your Personality, or the original one was Personality. And this is on Mirrorwood Records, which was a small, was a sister label to Mira. And they were founded in L.A. in 1965 by Randy Wood. Now, Jackie Lee is a nom de plume, you know, a fake name, to a singer by the name of Earl Nelson. Earl Nelson started with Class Records, which is an L.A. Thing, on his own. But then he hooked up with somebody else, and I can't think of the guy's last name, but Bob and Earl. Now, Bob and Earl were the first people to record Harlem Shuffle. I didn't know if you knew that part of it, TC. But
No, I didn't. But remember, I sent you a list of all the different names this guy sang under. It's pretty impressive, and Earl was one of them.
Earl Nelson. But this one is Jackie Lee, okay? And again, this is a song that he actually did a song for Mirrorwood called The Duck, which was a minor hit. But he did about four or five other singles for them. And this particular one just didn't hit real well, but just wait until you hear this, okay? If you weren't blown away like you were with Gene and the Darlings, I'll be really surprised. And this is Personality by Jackie Lee.
Baby,
Okay, TC, what do you think of that one?
Well, what do you think I think about that song? That thing was hot. That was a hot song. In fact, I was Googling as I was listening to it, and the second half of that duet you're talking about was Bobby Garrett was the guy's name.
Okay.
It was Bob and
Thank
Earl.
You.
But, yeah, Merwood Records, they really they tried hard to be, you know, like the Northern Soul label. But I, you know, again, it was just, I think the market was pretty saturated at that time between Stax and Motown, and nobody else had a chance.
Well, let's put it this way. Back in the 60s, everyone had a record press, I mean, or studio. I mean, even Bradford. You know, there were people out of Bradford, and we had a local record label and things like that. I mean, and so everyone was trying to at least hit on a local level, and hopefully it would jump into a national level or at least a regional level. But, I mean, you know, there were so many, like in New Orleans, in Texas, Chicago. You know, I mean, you talk about Chicago, and you talk about Chess Records and VJ and all these other smaller labels. The Aristocrat label was from there. And then, of course, you get into L.A. And Modern Records by the Biriani Brothers and such. I mean, just an amazing amount of labels. And so to try to get any national attention was really difficult.
And it came right back to that one DJ that took a chance to play a song. You know, play
absolutely
all of these guys, throw them on the turntable, see, you know, running up the flagpole, see all ways. Actually, Merwood Records, I was just reading, they had more success selling their albums, their music in the U.K., than they did in the United States, because there's that whole big Northern Soul sound, the Dublin sound, and they actually fit in quite well. And that takes us back to the movie The Commitments, you know, how how the whole soul music was so big up in Ireland and the UK, and that's where they had more success selling what we just heard.
Well, you know, that was a common thing, because if you take a look at the British invasion, you know, they took from R&B, the black artists from the 50s, and then translated it and brought it back to the U.S. So you know, when we get into the 60s and we get into Wilson Pickett, we get into Lee Dorsey, and we get into those people, that translated extremely well into England.
Yeah, for everything that came across the pond to us, we were sending stuff back over there. So, I mean, in fact, even before the British invasion. And, yeah, you're right. And look at how many, and we talked about cover songs, how many, like, the Rolling Stones. They're like, It's All Over Now, which was their first big hit. That was a cover song from the United States, you know, from a Cleveland group, a Cleveland doo-wop group even. So, I mean... And a black Cleveland doo-wop group. And that's where, you know, I mean, people, the influence of the black music in all rock and roll. And because I'm saying all rock and roll to the newest guys. Yeah, so the newest guys, because they're influenced by the Rolling Stones. The Rolling Stones are influenced by the black music. So, I mean, you can't ignore you know, the how strong that you know, the black music in early rock and roll, early gospel, all the way back to the gospel, like we're talking 1920s, how much of an influence it is on what we hear today. And I got a real quick one for you. I had a couple years ago, we hired a new kid, black kid. He's like early 20s, and I was training him on the ambulance. And he turned on a hip-hop station, which I absolutely hate. I said, come on, man. I don't want to hear that. He goes, you ain't into black music? I go, really? How about Wilson Pickett, Ella Fitzgerald, blah, blah, blah. I'm naming off all these people. He's like looking at me really stupid, like, who the hell are they? I go, dude, if you're going to hit me with black music, go back to see where it came from. Because these people are why you are listening to what you're listening to today. So, yeah.
Agreed.
That's my little story. We only got a couple minutes left, Carl.
Well, what we're going to do now is we're going to do a little bit of we actually only have 90 seconds left. So we're going to do a quick housekeeping. So here we go. Just a moment. So Thursday, I'm going to have Cameron Sullivan on this coming Thursday. And we're going to continue our shows on Black History Month. And we're going to be talking about black directors of film. Also, we have on the 18th, we've got Adam going to be doing at the Cathode Ray Mission a show on John Ford. And then we have a number of things that are still up in the air. But I can tell you that we're going to have Rick Coleman on at the end of the month talking about New Orleans music. And we've got numerous other things happening. We've got more. We haven't decided what movie we're doing yet, but we're doing another commentary watch on Tuesday with John Killian and Sean. Can't remember Sean's name, but there we go. And we have 10
okay,
seconds left, so I guess at this point,
okay,
I'm going to see if we can do a last song.
Tonight, make sure, Carl, make sure you mention 2 weeks from tonight we're continuing our Black History show.
Yeah, and Rachel will be back with us. Unfortunately, she just wasn't feeling well or something like that. She gave me a message. But she'll be back in 2 weeks, and we'll be doing another show on Black History Month for music. And that's 2 weeks from today. And we're gonna end up with one of her songs right now. That's going to be Tell Him by Lauryn Hill. So we just want to say good night.
And
please join Rachel in 2 weeks.
Listening.
And we'll
thank
talk to you soon.
Listening.
All right. We'll see you soon. Okay. Thanks, TC. All right. Good night, people.
All right, buddy.
Need.